It's the Fan Morning Show, brought to you by Guardian Protection. Pat Bostic with you until 10 o'clock this morning, filling in for the venerable Adam Crowley and legendary Doran Dickerson. Ty Polk behind the glass. Got a great show planned for you. Going to be interactive today. Going to take your calls, 412-928-9370. You can chime in. We're starting with a very cliche, simple proposition. Your 2026 New Year's resolutions for Pittsburgh sports. And I'm going to start with the sports candidly that I am not as much of an expert on. So, Ty, I will lean on your expertise. I heard you talking very knowledgeably about them in the pre-show, the pre-pre-show, the wake-up show.
Early morning show.
Early morning show. All different names for that show. Number one, and I don't know where the Penguins are right now. I know where they're at from a statistical standpoint, standings wise. They're in the fringe of the playoffs, right? In the wild card picture. But I don't know where they're at in terms of, like, I don't know if the Penguins and the Steelers are in that much of a different place organizationally. Like, they're both kind of in purgatory. They're competitive. They're probably going to have a winning record, but are they contenders? Now, I will say this without a shadow of a doubt. Should the Penguins be a contender? The month of December, those seven straight losses, I've never seen anything like what we saw with those late third period collapses.
It's usually the other side around where the Penguins are capitalizing on it, but it's just... Sometimes you look at it, it's bad pinches. It's just sometimes their defense, it's always, even at their absolute best, and I'm talking Stanley Cup champions, occasionally their defense would just have a brain fart.
Letang will have a make a mistake and be aggressive, or Malkin will get one, you know, taken from him and they'll go on an odd man break. You know, their defense and their goaltending needs to improve. And that's my resolution, is like, they've got to close out games. If they have to be perfect in those late moment games. They're not they're scoring goals at a feverish clip these last two games. I think 7-5, right?
Yes.
They've been impressive, and the defense has been better. And I think Skinner gives them a veteran presence in the net. They've got the exciting young prospect as well. But defense and late game performance, that's my resolution. It's like, get that going, Coach Muse. Like, come on. Because this team... there's still brilliance with Sidney Crosby and Malkin and Letang.
And Carlson as well.
And Carlson. I mean, this is a good hockey team. But I wonder, and I'm curious your opinion, can they be great? Or are we just... and I wonder where fans fall on this, right? I wonder where Pittsburgh falls on this. 412-928-9370. Like, I've been with buddies that are like, oh, that's okay. You know, it's a better draft pick. And is that where we're at in with the Penguins too? Kind of?
That's the thing. And this is where the Steelers were with Ben Roethlisberger. It's when you have great talent, you occasionally, this great talent, it'll just trump everything. Like, you could have these bad stretches, then boom, boom, here's a 7-goal game. Here's a 5-goal game. They have good pieces, but they're in that in-between, which is always rough, in which you're trying to rebuild on the fly. And when you have a Sidney Crosby, it hamstrings you because you want to continue going on.
Right.
And you have a ton of these great players. Malkin, he's been hurt, so we haven't seen him. And that was a lot of the struggle in that 7-game losing streak, but... You're just wondering, when can you see that consistency? Because there's times that the Penguins will have this great, great few weeks defensively, and then suddenly, where did it go? You just want things to be on a perfect axis at the entire time, and for some reason, over the last few years, they've had excellent stretches with Mike Sullivan before Muse came in, in which you're going, all right, this looks like this team can find its way and become a playoff team. And you think back to how many times whenever they switch coaches, the team was just looking horrible. And then they find a way, they make a run, they make the playoffs. And you're just going, can they put themselves in a position right now? Because right now, they have 43 points. The next team is Buffalo with 46. They're 3 points
out. They're right
there. They're really right there.
Yeah, and I like how Kyle Dubas has managed this, and I think it takes a very deft touch and really good management, and they're going through ownership changes, and there's been a lot of going on that have made this road more difficult. And that road I'm talking about is, how do you smoothly transition from one era to the next? And the Crosby, Malkin, whenever Letang era, whenever that comes to an inevitable end, it's not going to be forever. We know that. It feels like it. These guys have been playing from Pittsburgh for 25 years. Less than that, but obviously it's been a long time. It's been 20 at least. You know, how do you transition, stockpile talent, while remaining competitive? And that is getting enough draft picks. It's making key trades. It's doing things along the way. You can't just sit idly by and hope that you fall into a diamond in the rough. You have to be active in your pursuit of the replacement, the next phase. And that's what's interesting about the Penguins. But they're fun to watch. Went to a game this year. They're fun to watch. They play a great brand of hockey. I like their style. It's just, man, these late game collapses in December were that will prevent them from going absolutely anywhere. And I know minimal about the X's and O's of hockey, but I can tell you this: if you're blowing 3-goal leads late in the game, that does not augur well for your future.
They were at American Thanksgiving. This is the big part for hockey. They were still in a playoff spot. It's very rare that a team that was not in a playoff, that was in a playoff spot at Thanksgiving, didn't make the playoffs. So they have that running for them. And previously, they've completely flipped it on its axis, in which they weren't a playoff team at Thanksgiving, and then they go on a run and make it. So the question is, can they get that one last run? It's usually March where they go off as a team, at least historically, and the last few years that hasn't happened. So it seems like they're catching steam again. The question is, can they maintain that?
Yep.
If they can maintain that, this is a team that Florida made the Stanley Cup final in the eighth spot. The Penguins lost it their first year going on this run Florida had. They were in that eighth spot, yeah. Because once you get in, I know everyone says that once you get in the tournament, anything could happen. In the NHL, if you get in there, it's literally 100 dice rolls on what could happen, because you could be the one that's raising that cup at the end of the season, or you could be out in 4 games.
Yeah, it's hockey. Playoff hockey is as fun to watch as anything. I mean, and this Penguins on a path to the playoffs, this Penguins team. But obviously, my resolution for 2026 is that they clean up their late game woes. And if they do, I think they'll be in the mix. They'll be in the mix. And speaking of in the mix, the Pirates, the Pittsburgh Pirates. As we flip the calendar, we're what, a month or so away from pitchers and catchers? I'm getting stuff about youth baseball already for my kids. Like, we are on the boundary of it being time for baseball, and looking forward to warmer weather and all those things as I look out and see a plow going by my car in the parking lot here at Foster Plaza. Hopefully we don't get snowed in. I want to see them continue to be a hunter in terms of acquisitions in the offseason. I would say, Ty, and I'm curious your opinion, I like what they've done so far. They were left at the altar a couple times. How legitimate were their pursuits of Kyle Schwarber and others? I don't know. But I believe they were in the mix. But ultimately, when you're a middle market team, you can't overextend at the expense of other potential moves you can make if you know that they are there's potential. You know, Yostinson Garcia being a prime example. Like, the shelf life of a Yostinson Garcia is, I mean, he's one of the top prospects in baseball. And to have him in the outfield out there with O'Neill Cruz, who hasn't played his best baseball yet, is pretty darn exciting. You know that Schwarber will give you an immediate pop, but they're making what I would call their uncharacteristic moves in terms of like multi-year signings and the type of player they're bringing in. Looking at, you know, Brandon Liu or Ryan O'Hearn, like these are solid moves. I want to see one more. I want to see one more. Like, they need somebody at shortstop, somebody just as a legit, if not an all-star, a perennial in all-star conversation.
I understand what you mean. And when it comes down to it with the Pirates, it's not about these big hacks that they're going for. I mean, it's much like the saying in baseball, base hits fine.
Yeah.
Doubles fine. You don't need to hit home runs. Like, I think that's what got people excited, because the Pirates are finally acting like a small market team that realizes their window.
Yep. Well, they have a window with one of the stars of the game, if not the face of the game.
And who knows what's going to happen after this year, because there's been thoughts of a lockout coming through. So naturally, you're hoping to get one playoff run with Skeens, and plus it could be a situation. I don't think everyone was asking for a Schwarber or asking for some Ohtani deal. They were just make these significant moves, add bats into theirs that are. It costs money, of course. It's more money than you ever spent before.
Right. No question. And the other thing I don't think we can underemphasize is, you know, the influence of Donnie Kelly on the lineup consistency. I mean, things were so random with this team, night in, night out, series in, series out with their lineups. At least now you're acquiring enough capable players at key positions where you're not just like rolling dice out and shaking them up in a popcorn machine and then saying, here's who we're playing, right? Yeah. Like, I think this team can be more consistent. Their pitching's still going to be elite. I mean, it's going to be elite. This pitching staff with Skeens and Keller, you know, Jared Jones expected back, what, June? July, something like that, coming back from Tommy John surgery. Bubba Chandler, Ashcraft, Santana in the reliever spot. Like, one more move is what I'm asking for this new year from the Pittsburgh Pirates. One more move.
Well, that one move might potentially be coming because Kazuma Okamoto has been the guy that has been connected to the Pirates recently, and it seems like this is starting to kick up a little bit. He has U.S. meetings coming through right now over the last couple days. Now, we'll see what happens, but the Pirates have been a part of that, the Padres as well. It's these small moves, and you remember the last time they had a big international signing was Jung-ho Gang, and that didn't go well, but because of reasons outside of baseball.
Yeah,
when he was on the field actually doing work, it went pretty well, all things considered.
Yeah, no, I mean, they're linked, obviously, to Okamoto or Cody Bellinger. And I think Okamoto is more realistic. I mean, Bellinger's a perennial all-star. But I like what this team's done so far. I want to see one more move, preferably, at the shortstop spot. And then I think this team can compete. Certainly in division. I mean, are they the Dodgers or the Yankees? I mean, or the Phillies? Like, that's not who they're going to be. That's never who they're going to be. They have elite pitching. They have the most elite pitcher in baseball. And I think a pretty good staff around him. Now they have some bats. Give him some run support. Like, he should have a winning record this year. The fact that he was able to do what he did with, what did he finish, 500? Oh. I've been below 500, right?
Let's see what this is. Stand by.
I think it might be below 500.
No, he's 10-10.
So he finished 500. I thought he finished 500. And then to win the Cy Young is like absurd. I mean, if they win 15, if he goes 15-5 or 14-6, you know.
His floor should be 15 wins.
Absolutely.
His floor really should be 15 wins. And I guess the ceiling, you might go, you put him at 20. That's how good his stuff was.
Well, and then you start to actually get into some meaningful games in July, August, September, and you might be willing to let him go a little longer and start to say, okay, we're gonna ride him. Whereas they've been in almost shutdown mode the last couple seasons because they're not even in consideration for a playoff spot. But I mean, let's say they finish in the National League Central. Yeah, the Brewers had 97 wins, Cubs had 92. They win 6 more games with Skeens. How many more wins does, you know, Garcia and Hearn and Lou get you? Maybe 10? 8? Just their bats alone?
Bats also help. I mean, there's always 10 games that a manager wins you in a season. And I like Donnie Kelly more than I liked the previous guy.
Yeah.
Shelton.
Well, you're looking at it being at 86 wins. And right there. I mean, now I think they need one more move, one more acquisition. And hopefully we see that very soon.
Suarez is also available, and they're Eugenio Suarez, who was on the Mariners.
Yep.
But they may potentially, Seattle's also another team looking at Okamoto, and that could be a replacement. So if you fall for Okamoto, if he goes to Seattle, there's your guy.
Yeah, so there's potential out there to add your shortstop and a bat in the lineup. It could help you make a run at this thing. And like you said, Ty, with lockout looming, the time is now for the Pittsburgh Pirates with Paul Skeens. More of our 2026 New Year's resolutions for Pittsburgh sports next. It's the Fan Morning Show on Sports Radio 93.7 The Fan. Fan text line brought to you by Edgar Snyder & Associates, a personal injury law firm where they always say there's never a fee unless we get money for you. Pat Bostic rolling through my 2026 New Year's resolutions. Not my personal ones, though. Don't even know what those are yet. However, I do know what I'm wishing, hoping, planning for Pittsburgh sports. Ty Polk behind the glass. Hope you had a great New Year's Eve. Safe, happy, and healthy. And your start to 2026 is with us. And we'll take your calls, 412-928-9370. Got a lot of time today to talk CFP. We're going to talk Steelers-Ravens. Jeff Hathorn at 8:30. Bill Hillgrove at 7:45. But for now, we take a trip around Pittsburgh sports and talk about our hopes for them in 2026. 2025, not a great year for Pittsburgh sports. I mean, really no Pitt volleyball, the most noteworthy contender, obviously the Riverhounds.
Yeah.
With a W, I think take the cake. Obviously, we've had some stories here and there. Had some glimpses of greatness, but nothing really to write home about. 2026, I'm not sure there will be either. However, we talked about the Pirates, and I think a playoff berth would be a big step forward for them, obviously, something they haven't done in a long time. And doing it with Paul Skeens before what we think will be a lockout would be special because you may not see him again. in Pittsburgh. I don't want to talk negative, though, on this first day of 2026. Now on to the Pittsburgh Steelers. And I have a very simple New Year's resolution for them. I don't know who their quarterback will be in 2026 when they kick things off at Acrisure Stadium or wherever they may play to start the season. However, I am very confident in this. My New Year's resolution for the Steelers is to not draft a quarterback in the first two rounds of the 26th NFL draft, which will be here in the city of Pittsburgh. I have next to zero confidence in this draft class. It has gone from being heralded as the best draft class of quarterbacks since the Elway Marino draft to now there only being potentially one, maybe two quarterbacks taken in the first round. Arch Manning isn't going to come out. Drew Aller's becoming, you know, obviously he's damaged goods at the moment with the ankle. And will probably be a mid-round pick, third, fourth round. I think there's value there, but you kind of did that with Will Howard last year, so why would you do it again? When Will Howard really hasn't been afforded an opportunity, and you like him? By all accounts, all indications are you like Will Howard. The fan base seems to really like Will Howard. I would not draft a quarterback in the first two rounds of the NFL draft if I'm the Steelers. A, I don't think the class is that good. B, I think you're forcing it as a result. C, you put a lot of pressure on that individual, being that they were selected by Pittsburgh in Pittsburgh. Not that they couldn't handle it, but I don't think Fernando Mendoza or Dante Moore do it for me. I don't think they do it for me. So that's my take. I think next year's draft class looks a lot better. And I think there are options for 26 that keep you competitive. Now, disclaimer, we don't know what's going to happen with these Pittsburgh Steelers this offseason. Adam Schefter is talking about Mike Tomlin not coaching. Fans are clamoring for a change.
They've been doing that, let's be honest.
They have, but every year I think that this goes on, it gets louder and more realistic. We thought all chips in this year. You waited on Aaron Rodgers. You acquired Jalen Ramsey and traded Minkah Fitzpatrick. You re-sign and extend TJ Watt and acquiesce to Cam Hayward during training camp, albeit I think a minimal concession for him. And you add Kenneth Gainwell, who's been your best offensive player. You trade George Pickens and get DK Metcalf. Jonnu Smith, and you're in position to clinch a playoff berth and win the AFC North for the first time in 5 years. I personally, all things being equal, if Mike Tomlin's the head coach, if Arthur Smith's the offensive coordinator, I'm favoring bringing Aaron Rodgers back. I'm favoring bringing him back. Now, I don't love what I saw in Cleveland. And we might as well just dive into that right now. We'll dive into it again. But we've got all day here. I honestly thought watching the game that, and this has been said multiple times, so I'm not breaking any news here, that they were more concerned with Myles Garrett than they were with winning the game. Not overtly, but it consumed their thought process to a degree that it clouded their vision of what they could have taken advantage of. They were so, it's almost like playing not to lose versus playing to win. They were so concerned with him ruining the game that they weren't as concerned about how they win the game. And I think that bled into Aaron Rodgers' performance. They use Kenneth Gainwell and chips and stuff a lot. They don't have DK Metcalf. They won't have him Sunday. They didn't have Calvin Austin. And Gainwell didn't have enough touches in the game. Like, legitimate, get him out in the route. They were chipping and cracking and all these things on Garrett, who's lined up damn near the midfield logo when the ball's on the right hash.
Yeah, it was wide nines. He was doing wide 13s.
It was a wide 20. I mean, he was way out there. But I like what I've seen from Rodgers over the past, in the aggregate, over the past five games. I like what I've seen. I think his leadership is noticeable. I think he likes it here. I think he can still play the position at a pretty high level. Still can throw the football when he has a full complement of targets. I mean, listen, he's going out there against one of the better defenses in football in Cleveland with Marquez Valdes-Scantling, Adam Thielen, Scotty Miller, and no Darnell Washington for the balance of three quarters. Like, he didn't have a lot around him, and he was not good in the game. But sometimes a quarterback's performance isn't always a reflection of how they played. It can be a reflection of a lot of things. And I thought mitigating factors or detrimental factors were their obsession with Myles Garrett. You should pay attention to him. I would not utilize Kenneth Gainwell as much as they did in chipping. I'd use somebody else. Because Gainwell's probably in that lineup, probably your second best receiver, maybe your best receiver.
He's the best receiver.
So I would line him in a slot. I'd motion him out. I'd get matchups with him. Get the ball out of Rodgers' hand. There's two ways you can protect, right? You can block someone or you can get the ball out.
Wheel routes, I think, and actually that would probably be another good thing for him.
You're throwing go routes to Valdes-Scantling and like you're trying to get the ball out fast. I saw a clip of criticizing Rodgers for missing, I think it was Thielen or maybe it was Scotty Miller on a pick route underneath. I mean,
again, is it that fourth and one?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, you're throwing a go ball to Scotty Miller. That's not a great decision. However, they were getting consistent pressure in the game. And you've got press bump man-to-man. And Myles Garrett's going to be one-on-one. I'm not holding that ball. So I'm talking out of both sides of my mouth a little bit here, which is fine.
No, you're playing devil's advocate. And I'll add to it right now. You have to remember, that wasn't their starting left tackle out there.
No, it's a undrafted free agent.
A good journeyman, but still,
he's played great.
Yeah.
I've given him a lot of credit. They've had, no Sayamalu. They've been a revolving door at left guard. You still have young players at center and right guard, and basically a rookie at right tackle. Listen, Cleveland's one of the best pass rushes in football. So were, who was it? Who'd they play that was an elite pass rush that gave them a lot of problems?
Hutchinson, yes, for Detroit.
Yeah, Detroit. Chicago has a good pass rush.
Chicago was effectively without a starting linebacker game.
None. And it obviously was no Aaron Rodgers in that game. But Cleveland's a damn good defense. And the Steelers were anemic. Now, that being said, he goes down the field late and you think he's going to tie the game up. I mean, some of the throws he made on that drive to Freiermuth. But to me, what that tells me, and I always felt this as a quarterback, when you got into a two-minute situation, you kind of throw the game plan. Not totally. You still want to match up here. You got to have eyes and give a little bit of help to the left tackle with Garrett. But you're not going to – you got to get guys out in the route. You can't release two or three receivers against a, 500 two deep coverage.
Well, I'll ask you this, Pat, with 2 minutes, with 2 minute offenses, these fast break offenses, how much is it basically up to you? It's not really any input from the head coach or the offensive coordinator.
It's a lot. A lot's up to you. Yeah, you're taking control. And I thought we saw some. We quip on the morning show on Thursdays about Rogue Rodgers, and I don't think we saw Rogue Rodgers against Cleveland. I don't know if we've seen Rogue Rodgers in earnest. I think that his input on the offense has increased over the course of the season. That's natural for any new quarterback to an organization, especially one that comes in June or July. Like it's first time in the organization, and it's playoff time, so it's time to throw caution to the wind to some degree in terms of not wanting to get him hit too much and things like that. I think there was probably an element, and this is on Mike Tomlin and the Steelers, of, man, we really don't need to go like super aggressive in this game. We can beat this team 17-10 and not get Aaron hit. Right? I think early in the season it was, okay, let's tread water a little bit so that we can preserve Aaron for the later part of the season in the playoffs, and then they get themselves in a situation where they're 500 and they have to make plays. But I think they probably went to Cleveland thinking, you know, we're playing a rookie quarterback, and we could beat this team playing pretty conservative and get out of here. It's ugly bad conditions. Let's get out of here. Don't let Garrett Rush, you know, wreck the game, and let's move on. And that's not what happened. And I think that's where Steelers fans get frustrated, is they think Tomlin thinks they can win that way, but they're really not built to win that way. That's his MO. That's what he believes, which there's other coaches that believe that. They're becoming fewer and farther between. Whereas guys like Ben Johnson and Dan Campbell are going for it on fourth down at their own 30. And in the games that Pittsburgh's looked really good, Detroit, Baltimore on the road, Miami at home, they were aggressive. They were not aggressive against Cleveland. And that's Sunday. I expect to see them coming out guns a-blazing. And it's a shame, and it may cost them a playoff spot, what DK Metcalf did in Detroit.
I think the one thing that I've kind of gone away from, you know, not playing scared or anything like that, or living in your fears, I think the question when you the real question that Tomlin needs to ask, he needs to prove that it's not about winning, it's about hating to lose. You know they can win. Some of these situations they get into, you want them to go, all right, put your foot down, go and show that we're a playoff team and there's no question against Cleveland. I feel that first drive against Baltimore is going to be so much of a prove it that you would hate to lose in a situation, and you would hate to lose against Baltimore this way. That's how I want to see them. I want to see them straight up attack.
Well, they have to, because and Mike Tomlin said this going down to play Baltimore in Baltimore, right? We have too much familiarity. We know we have to be aggressive against them. Well, you are not going to beat them in a rock fight. It's not, you are not going to beat Baltimore in a ground and pound, who can run the football better game. You're going to beat them with speed, explosion. I want to see Calvin Austin involved. I want to see them throw the football around the yard and be aggressive, because Baltimore is going to try to sit on that thing and run it with Derrick Henry. Yeah. And they're going to do it a lot. They're going to do it a lot. So this is a game where I'm like, I'm taking the ball. I want to get up early, and I want to make Lamar beat us as much as we can. And if we have TJ back and we've got Herbig healthy and we can go pin our ears back against Lamar late, that's the formula. Get up, make them throw it, because they're going to run it early regardless of the score. Get into that third quarter with a lead, and then keep throwing it. Stay aggressive. And then when you need to close the game out, you're fresh. You've got two backs back there, and Warren and Gainwell, that can pop one.
I don't think I've ever been more confident in a running back getting really a duo that the Steelers had, that they could get 4 to 5 yards on first and 10, probably since Williams and Bell.
Yeah, especially against a defense like Baltimore's. That's not, I mean, they're not great. They're a middling group. But we've gone too long on this topic, and we're going to go longer on it. There's a lot to discuss here. 8 o'clock hour is going to be all Steelers-Ravens. Our next New Year's resolution is going to transition us into the 7 o'clock hour, which will be very college football Pitt-focused. And the great Bill Hillgrove will join us at 7:45. We'll talk some college hoops, too, because there's been a lot of opining by college basketball coaches about the state of things. And I want to get into it, because the state of things is not great. And I work in the industry. It's not great. But I'm off this week. You know, this is my, we got like a winter break at Pitt. So I got a chance to kind of like collect my thoughts and do a little bit of a brain dump. And we're going to do that in the 7 o'clock hour. My last New Year's resolution, though, is next on the Fan Morning Show. Fan Hotline presented by Sullivan Super Service, Pittsburgh trusted plumbing and HVAC provider for over 50 years. You can reach us on the fan hotline, 412-928-9370, via call or text. Taking your calls all show long. Wrapping up hour one, full hour one here, with our New Year's resolutions and their Pittsburgh sports edition. And the college football playoff is underway. And I think largely, and my last resolution has a lot to do with college football, college basketball, college sports. Largely, the college football playoff, notwithstanding, the top 12 teams should get in. Ty, I'm sorry. The top 12 teams should just get in. I think group of five. I mean, I'm teetering on whether they should just have their own playoff or just have a play-in game for a final spot for a group of five team. I respect them greatly, and there are a lot of good players out there. But this is what's going to happen every single year when you have a Tulane or a James Madison get in. They're likely not going to have a head coach because they're going to get plucked.
Or they're going to be potentially getting ready for the next job.
Correct. And the playoff, your players are going to have their eyes on somewhere else, too. Now, can you balance those things? Absolutely. And I think that John Sumrall and Chesney at James Madison did a terrific job this year. But they're not on Oregon's level. They're not on Ole Miss's level. I think in a given year, you can have a UCF a couple years back. You could have a school that is a Boise State and makes a run, but I think it's probably one, not two of them. And thus, I think that the rankings should matter, a la Notre Dame should be in. And conference championship games should matter. But, again, nothing's perfect in this life. The college football playoffs, great theater. And we saw the first instance of the quarterfinals last night with Miami getting a 24-14 victory over Ole Miss. They will move on to the Verbo Fiesta Bowl, which is on January 8th. So a week from today, they'll take on the winner of Ole Miss and Georgia at 7:30 p.m. That'll be on ESPN. Be something to see Georgia take on Carson Beck, their former quarterback. That would just basically encapsulate what college football's at.
Did you hear the reports? Apparently, ESPN's trying to get Lane Kiffin on the broadcast.
Wouldn't surprise me. I mean, he had a nice leather coat on. I saw him like looking all tan.
He looks like he was enjoying hot yoga.
Yeah, well, he probably was enjoying hot yoga. What an interesting cat. And that was a saga too.
Hey, I love Lane Kiffin. I
think he's a brilliant football coach.
I know that he's a horrible person for what he's done this, but as someone that I'm a fan of USC.
You said he's a horrible person. I don't know if he's a horrible person.
I think he has horrible ideas.
I don't know if he's a good person. I don't know what kind of person he is. I know this, and this is gonna segue beautifully. College football, college sports is becoming more about mercenaries than it is about loyal troops and, you know, true blue company men, right? Go to one school, stay at one school, finish the job. Lane Kiffin's doing what players are doing. And he was doing it before they could do it, right? He's taking a job, asking for the world, and getting it. I mean, he's playing the game. So, it's not how I lead my life. I'm not Lane Kiffin. I'm not a Power 5 college football coach. I'm not a coach in the SEC. But he certainly has developed quite a lightning rod persona.
He's always been that way. And let me amend that with what I mean. I think that he's horrible for thinking that he could potentially go to an in-conference rival,
right,
and it's not some group of five team. He's going from Ole Miss to Louisiana. It's one thing if he went from Tennessee after 1 year to USC. That was in a totally different era, and that's across the country. But
right.
I like him. I've always thought that in terms of offensive stuff, and I thought that he got a raw deal from Al Davis with the Raiders and all that stuff.
Right.
But And of course, his father is the greatest defensive coach ever, in my opinion.
Oh, Tampa too.
Yeah.
Oh, but absolutely.
It's just
Monty Kiffin.
How could he think that that was going to fly?
Because, well, A, his agent is Jimmy Sexton, who runs college football, and has his Rolodex of coaches is 80% of the SEC, if not more. So he basically, typically what Jimmy wants, Jimmy gets. That's another story. I'll say this. The college football playoff is great theater. And by the way, you can follow the Fan video stream on X as well. We're live on X right now at 93.7 The Fan. It's great theater. I'm all for it expanding to maybe 16 teams. I think bowl games should go away. Bear with me. I think that, because there's a lot of gamblers out there that are probably getting really mad at me right now, that because bowl games are great for that, right? But they've really lost their luster. Attendance is down, notwithstanding Penn State, Clemson. Looked to be a pretty good crowd up there in the Bronx. Attendance is down. Participation's down because players are opting out and or transferring. And there's nothing on the line, so guys aren't, are they fully invested? The playoff was 16. You started the week after the conference championship games. The championship games are play-in games. So, like, the conference champions from the ACC, Big 12, SEC, Big 10 are in the CFP. And then there's play-in games for G5, for at-large bids. So you have, it's a 16-team playoff, but it's really 20 with a wild card round. And it is the whole month of December. Because you're bumping into NFL playoffs now, as we get to January 19th when the national championship game is. And it's going to be on a Monday night probably at 7:30. And it's in Miami, in Miami Gardens at Hard Rock Stadium. Let's bump it up. Or maybe bump it back a little bit, and let's have December be the playoff month.
Dan Lanning said that if it were his college football that he was the czar of, the playoff would have been done by January 1st. National champion would have been done.
I agree with Dan Lanning. I love Dan Lanning. I love college football as much as anybody. I agree with him totally on what's best for college football. And that what I would do with the bowl games, the sponsors, the venues, is I would have effectively rivalry games or key non-conference games played as bowl games in week zero, early in the season. So they matter. Right, you go to El Paso, or you go to, and maybe it's not, cause obviously El Paso, UTEP plays there, but maybe it is, and you get the full experience, and it's Pitt, Washington, and it's a non-conference Power 5 game, Power 4 crossover, or Pitt, West Virginia in Nashville, and it's still sponsored, there's an NIL component to it, but you bump it to week zero, and you leave December for the playoffs. Conference title games and playoffs. There's nothing else. Because one of college football's problems is it's too diluted. It's too disparate. All these media rights deals are separate. These bowl games are all different. Conferences have different TV arrangements. Like, it's all spread out. The college football playoff is the czar. They run the show. That contract is up for renegotiation, I think, in 2030 or 2031, something like that. Might be even before that. They have to make a decision on 16 teams, I think, this year. They call the shots. If they want the month of December, they can get the month of December. And these bowl games need to evolve. College football has evolved, and the bowl games have not. Now, that's not my resolution. We got off on a tangent. My resolution is that college sports itself gets fixed. How the hell we do that, I do not know. But I want to dive into that as we kick off the 7 o'clock hour. We've got transfer portal opening. January 2nd, yes, Rasheem Biles has entered the – well, he's not entered the transfer portal. He's announced that he intends to enter the portal. Pitt's star linebacker who played absolutely terrific in their bowl loss to East Carolina was one of the only bright spots in that ball game with his fumble recovery for a touchdown. And there's players going every which direction, and it's chaos, and there's money everywhere. And you have college basketball teams, programs, welcoming players mid-season that were entrants into the NBA draft. We've got coaches leaving mid-season. The calendar's messed up. There's a lot to unpack. We'll make sense of it next on the Fan Morning Show.